Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Football Podcast Show number 197.
Whoa, and 97?
Let's just say, I think this year's outdoor shows are over.
With
the weather, the way it's been in London recently, it's gone a bit grim. But
I'm glad we're indoors today.
Yeah, and you know what?
Wet arses, and we would have done.
Yeah, and you know why I'm not grim? Because I'm with Andy Franks and Dan Silver to do the podcast.
Oh,
always cheers while we go. Who wants to feel old?
Me. No, I am feeling old. I'm turning 29 next week.
Scary, isn't it? Christ. You're already past that, aren't you?
Oh, yeah,
your life's over.
Married, father, it's all done for.
Yeah, I'm really not looking forward to turning 30 as well in 3 years' time.
Shut up. Why are we supposed to be feeling old?
Why are you feeling old? Because this week it is 13 years since David Beckham's free kick took us through to the World Cup against Greece.
Is it really?
13 years.
It was a couple of days ago, wasn't it?
It was Monday.
That was my first year of Paul's residence at uni. 13 years ago.
That was my first year of GCSEs. I was in year 10.
I got chucked up into the roof of the sports bar that I was watching it in on campus. So I literally went through the roof.
I was about to turn 17.
I remember jumping.
No, sorry. About to turn 16. I was about to turn 16.
Yeah,
Jesus.
I was 14. I was jumping up and down
21.
On the sofa and cheering. And then I put a flag with "We're going to Japan" out the bedroom window, even though I wasn't going to Japan. And
the royal we.
And my bedroom faces garden, so nobody really would have seen it.
I haven't thought about that moment. But do you know what made it just that little bit more special? The fact that he had about 10 free kicks beforehand, didn't he?
Yeah. But I tell you what, he was bloody good in that game. I mean, he was all over the pitch.
That was one of those cometh the hour, cometh the man, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Because let's face it, Greeks at that time were a pretty rotten team as well. I think they finished fourth in that group behind Finland.
But it was only.
They played well that game.
And actually,
bear in mind, it was only 2 years later they won the Euros.
Well, 3 years later.
Sorry, they won the Euros.
Yeah, oh, no, definitely. So they were improving, but at the time they weren't great. And what gets forgotten in that is that we were helped a lot by Antti Niemi, who was a very, very good goalkeeper, you remember, at Southampton and Fulham. But he put in a worldie of a performance against Germany, so Finland drew 0-0. Because if Germany, as would have been expected, had beaten Finland, they would have gone through and we would have gone into the playoff. As it was to him out, but he arguably had just as big a hand as David Beckham.
Yeah. So probably bigger hands.
Bigger hands, certainly, you would imagine, yeah. You would. But, just something I saw earlier that makes us feel old. But it is International Week, it's qualifying week, so I suppose.
We'll talk about that in a minute.
It's
not
that exciting, is it? But we might as well get.
Well, let's just talk about it really quickly then. The fact is, we're going to beat San Marino, and it's just one of the worst games to ever watch, isn't it? It's just terrible.
The only reason I'm actually looking forward to it is because a mate of mine I haven't seen for ages, he's just moved back to London, texted me on Monday going, "Are we playing Thursday night?" I went, "I think so." He went, "Fancy a few beers?" I went, "Yeah."
I tell you what.
So actually, I'm not quite looking forward to it. Yeah. Mainly because it's been an excuse to catch up with the mate.
The Estonia game will be a little bit more interesting.
Well, Estonia and no mugs. You'd expect us to beat them. I mean, we went and won 2-0 in Switzerland, so in theory, we should be able to win 3 or 4-0 in Estonia.
It's never that
They did get to the playoffs for Euro 2012, where they got absolutely crushed by Ireland, which maybe says a bit about them. But at the same time, yeah, they're a middling European team.
It's just nothing to get excited about.
I'm a bit more interested in the games that Wales and Scotland have got coming up. Because, you know, they've started the campaign all right. Wales haven't been in a major tournament since the 50s.
That's ridiculous.
Well, 1958, yeah.
And Scotland haven't been in a tournament since 96.
No, 98. They went to the World Cup in 98, yeah.
So, and do you know what? I mean, they're starting to look like they're getting their act together as squads. So
especially
I'm
with 2014.
Yeah, it is actually a little bit more interest, isn't it?
And the Irish are in a fantastic group as well. The Irish are
in Ireland
really,
and Scotland's
strong
group.
Yeah, yeah,
Ireland
yeah.
and Scotland's group. Yeah, and yeah, yeah. You look at it, I mean, Ireland are playing Gibraltar and then going away to Germany, so they're going to be between a rock and a hard place. But I've stolen that off someone else, yeah. I can't take the credit.
Right.
But yeah, Wales at home to Bosnia, who again, no slouches. It's going to be Edin Dzeko versus Gareth Bale, let's face it. Then Cyprus.
Is Ramsey fit for the
Ramsey and Joe Allen are both out.
Ramsey's captain, isn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, on Gareth Bale, got a fourth time in a row, and
Wales Player of the Year.
Wales Player of the Year, and the only player to have ever got it four times.
Yeah,
really.
Yeah. Mark Hughes and John Artson won it three times.
Three times. Because I posed a question to Michael, not even thinking about it. I was like, how the fuck did Ryan Giggs not get Welsh Player of the Year 4 years? But then Mike made
never
the very
played,
good point.
Never played for him. Never turned
up. I sort of forget about that because I didn't really pay much attention to Ryan Giggs or Wales.
Yeah.
If you know what I mean. So, but obviously being a United fan, you'd have kept a very close eye on what he was doing during the internationals.
Well, you certainly knew Fergie's antics and not just limited to Wales, though. I think it was more so.
But I mean, that's terrible, really.
It is, but the fact that Ryan Giggs won less than 60 caps, bearing in mind he made his debut at 17 and stopped playing internationally, I think
he made
34.
Less than 60 caps, and how many times did he play for United?
900 and something.
Fucking hell.
It's mad, isn't it? I mean, he knew what side his bread was buttered.
I mean, they do play a few less games, Wales, than United, but
you would still expect it, given that some of the other players you've gotten close to 100 caps.
Yeah,
likes of Bellamy and
that is terrible.
So
really.
The other thing is that he's never really had career-threatening injuries either.
No,
he had
a few hamstring things when he was younger, but never anything.
Anyone travelling at that speed is going to, aren't they?
No broken legs or anything like that. Yeah. Do you know what I mean?
But fucking Fergie.
Well, but at the same time, throughout that period, Wales were so poor that I'm sure the argument Ferguson always had, and no doubt with the Welsh FA, was what's the point in Ryan Giggs playing when you're not going to do anything?
Actually, on Ferguson, who's enjoying the excerpts from Roy Keane's book?
I was going to say, that was something I was going to bring up as well.
It's quite a chilled out
quiet. I'll never read of it.
Oh, it is.
I love Roy Keane. Brilliant.
There's loads of, there's loads of negative, you know, oh, he's just a miserable git, he's this. But you made a good point, like when we were talking about when the excerpts came out on Monday or whenever it was.
It's been throughout this week, but yeah.
Yeah, well, I think when they got leaked or whatever it was about his bust up with Peter Schmeichel and him headbutting Schmeichel and Schmeichel turned out the next day with a black eye and saying he got a little elbow in training and stuff. But actually, like you, Mike made a good point.
I can't even remember the point, so I'll let you make it.
He made a good point that he thinks that someone like Roy Keane probably very much remembers the incidents as Roy Keane remembers it, if you know what I mean.
So it's
probably slightly embellished. However,
of course, but I think however, any autobiography is.
I have no doubt that there was some sort of scuffle with Schmeichel, and I love that he went, "You've been starting to piss me off. I think we need to sort this out." You can see it happening.
What I love most is the fact that Nicky Butt refereed it.
I'll tell you the other thing I really like is that apparently Bobby Moore could have... Bobby Charlton could have actually split it up.
Apparently he came out of his room...
He got woken up by the antics and then just let him carry on.
Well, I'm not being funny. I don't give a shit who you are unless you're the Incredible Hulk, possibly.
You're not going to stop them.
I'm not going to get into a fight between those two.
Fair play,
Jesus.
Now, you know my favourite bit that's come out of it all, lad? Did you see the excerpt today about why he didn't sign Robbie Savage?
Yeah, that's
brilliant.
That
because
is brilliant.
When he left to a voicemail, Robbie Savage's
voicemail.
Oh no, he didn't. But when he went to leave him one, his message was, "Hi, it's Robbie. What's up?"
Yeah, the old Budweiser back in the day. What's up?
Oh, that was dread.
He said he hung up the phone. He went,
I can't
be dealing with this, and didn't even bother trying to sign him because he didn't like his answer.
But to be fair, Robbie Savage has taken it very well.
Yeah, have you seen
on
that
on Twitter?
He tweeted yesterday or something, going, "Hi, Roy, what's up?"
But he said the fact that one of the best midfielders of all time wanted to sign him to play midfield. He's taken it as a compliment.
You should take that as a compliment.
Because he said he spoke to Hughesy, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was Hughesy
at the time. And Hughesy said to him that his legs had gone a bit by this point, but he could still definitely do a job, good character in a change room, which, like I said, it is a compliment. Yeah. It was just the fact that he didn't do it because of a fucking answer phone message.
Yeah.
But his answer phone is just brilliant. But the other one for me, which is fantastic, was obviously Alfinger Haaland's response, because that obviously came out. But the whole bit of this, which makes it great for me, is that Egil Ostenstad, obviously
ex-Southampton, scored a hat-trick against United on his Premier League debut.
He tweeted Alfinger Haaland saying, "Alfie, R. Keane is at it again. Could we have a Twitter response, mate?" Alfinger Haaland tweeted back saying, can't take a man seriously when he's got a beard like that, and tweeted a picture of Saddam Hussein.
Yeah. And to be fair, it is quite okay.
Actually, it's a reasonably good lookalike.
Well, I'll tell you something interesting.
But quite a good bit of banter.
Obviously, yeah, like Keno's spoken about Haaland again in his book.
Yeah, of course he has.
An interesting point that I think has kind of gone under the radar that Keane made. Everyone talks about Keane ending Haaland's career and going out to injury him, but it doesn't really get mentioned that Haaland played 4 days later for Norway and went on to play a few more times for Man City before succumbing to a different injury. So Keane actually had nothing to do with Haaland's career ending. It was actually, I think, the knee in the other leg, the one that he didn't hit, that was...
Then again, you could also speculate...
It was a horrific time.
Oh, no, it was horrific. But you could speculate that injury to that knee made it compensate for the other, and you don't know, blah, blah. Sorry, you are absolutely right, I'm saying, but... But yeah, it wasn't as a.
And it was still.
I can't believe he played 4 days later.
Oh, yeah. God, no. I can't believe he was walking 4 days later.
But then you think about it, you think back and you watch that challenge. All it is he has hit his studs, his legs off the ground. So in theory, it should just be an impact injury. I think the fact that his other leg was planted in the ground maybe has an impact. But there you go.
There you go.
Keane, I'm sure there'll be much more come out, and I think that will be quite high in the bestsellers list for Christmas. I'll certainly be buying it. Or hopefully there'll be a PDF version coming around like there was with Fergie's autobiography.
Yeah, how did we get that?
Someone sent it to me from an advertising agency, but it was literally making its way on the internet. I got sent it by someone, a mate of mine who works at a law firm.
Right.
So that it was.
My missus bought me the book. Actually,
did you know?
Well, no,
I think my
really
mum did.
Enjoyed reading it.
But it was also ended up being a massive seller in Iran. But because Iran doesn't have copyright laws or doesn't acknowledge Western copyright laws,
you can just copy
they
it
just
and
printed
it.
Off the PDF versions and published them like that. So no money went to Ferguson for it.
Really?
They all love
shame,
football out there.
Yeah. Really need
I know
money.
He was. Yeah, it's one less ivory back scratcher. But it did massively well in Iran, but
brilliant.
He saw no proceeds for it. But there you go. But speaking of. Managerial scuffles and slightly contentious managers, who would win in a fight, Mourinho or Wenger?
Wenger?
I think Wenger would have him, yeah.
No.
I don't think
Mourinho's
hardest.
All that?
Yeah, oh, definitely.
Yeah, but I think if he actually flicked Wenger, you'd break him. He's skeletal.
He is skeletal. He was the basis for the Italia 90 football mascot, which was that man made up of like cubes that was really thin.
I think Mourinho would be a biter.
Isn't this been?
He'd fight nasty.
Isn't this been blown way out of proportion though?
I mean, the thing is though, yes and no. I think that should not happen on the touchline. Wenger should know better than to try and like push him back into his technical area or whatever. Like, but it's just bad. It is bad for Wenger. But
it's not like Alan Pardew headbutting someone.
Oh God,
it?
No! I mean, no. But I don't think.
I think this has been really. Really blown out of proportion.
No, but I don't think it's been made as much of an issue as the headbutt.
Well, I disagree with that, and really? The only reason I disagree with it is because I didn't get a chance to watch any football on Sunday. So I heard about it, and then when I got home on Monday night, I watched Match of the Day 2 because I Sky Plus'd it. And I watched it, I was just like, sorry, I don't really see what the fuss is about. I mean, players push each other on the pitch all the time after, you know, a heat.
You expect a bit more maturity and decorum, though.
I was actually expecting something, after what I'd read and heard about it, I was expecting something a little bit more than.
I was just disappointed there was no Benny Hill music and chasing each other around a nurse.
It's a shame Mourinho didn't fall over.
Yeah, no, but I think he knew he couldn't have done. But professional managers like that shouldn't lay a hand on each other at all.
Agreed.
Full stop. But I know what you mean.
I think the best thing is that you know Mourinho definitely has his number, doesn't he? He's got Wenger's number.
He's under his skin.
And depending how this season goes, you could argue Wenger's maybe only got one or two more opportunities, depending obviously on cup competitions. But Arsenal haven't. I don't think they've started badly.
Beaten Mourinho, and for someone
12-0.
Yeah, for someone with Wenger's record, and you know, you just think that. I mean, I think it's quite an unbelievable stat.
It is an unbelievable stat.
In 12 attempts to never have beaten Mourinho.
It took Ferguson a long time to beat Mourinho. It wasn't until we played Inter Milan in the Champions League that Ferguson beat Mourinho. He's a very good manager. So,
I think with Dave Kidd in our paper, he actually just said, look. at the end of the day, you're looking at two managers, and one of them is literally at the height of his career and at the top of his game, and the other one's not quite there. You know, there's a difference in actually how good they are as managers.
And I would also argue that Wenger has never been one who's fared particularly well in
the big games,
in psychological battles, big games. Even when Arsenal had their invincibles, even when they were winning the league and playing great football,
good team.
They were still losing a lot of big games. Yeah. They were still ultimately, they might have won a few battles, they even won a few titles, but I think when he was against Ferguson, he usually won the war. Benitez usually won the war.
It is a little bit like he can't quite keep up with the mind games.
No,
he's not straight laced.
And he's a very intelligent man.
Yeah.
Certainly
hasn't got that sort of naughty mind gamey side to him.
He gets flustered.
Yeah, he does get flustered. Absolutely.
His football ethics are purist, you know, and that's why. Yeah, I don't really know anyone that dislikes Arsene Wenger other than Tottenham fans.
I didn't.
And you don't even.
I don't like him when he comes out with comments like
it can sometimes be embarrassing.
When he comes out with stupid stuff, you're just like, you're making yourself look like a complete prick.
I used to despise him for that. I've mellowed towards him simply because now he's harmless.
Sad is that though? A little bit. He's a little bit harmless now, isn't he?
Used to be like, oh look, Wenger's speaking. Even last season, he could have beat David Moyes.
On the Chelsea game.
On the Chelsea game, so that Cahill challenge was a red card. Which is really what everyone going. Was a red card.
So was the Welbeck challenge. So was the Welbeck challenge for me. 100%. 2 feet off the ground.
Totally agree.
100%.
I think I've talked about this probably more often on the show than anything else. And it's consistency in refereeing. I cannot believe how bad the consistency in refereeing has been this season. I used to bang on about it because I was at Griffin Park a lot and watching League One football, right? And the standard of refereeing in League One is ridiculous, especially given, you know, the physical nature of the game in the lower leagues. But I mean, fuck me! Watching some of these decisions at the moment in the Premiership
I'll come back to Chelsea very quickly in a sec. There was a Kabul had a challenge on Mane or Tadic, I think it was, in the Southampton game at the weekend. And for me personally, it was shoulder to shoulder. For me, it's like Kabul has swatted him aside, shoulder to shoulder. But he was the last man, and if it was deemed a foul, it was a fucking red card. He's got a yellow for it.
How can you call it a foul and not give him a red card?
100%. I don't think it was a foul. That's regardless.
And the penalty in the Chelsea 100%. Should have been a red card. It surely should have been off.
The one that highlighted it for me, the frustration, obviously the only game I watched in full at the weekend because of my limited TV capabilities, with the exception actually of AC Milan Chievo, which I'll go on to later, was the United Everton game, which was on BT. And
kind of them to do that for you, wouldn't it?
I know, it was nice, wasn't it? I had to do the classic Likely Lads, record it. Get this, I am middle class, but I had to go for brunch with the in-laws. So I had to record and then I had to go round Sainsbury's to pick up a few bits for dinner.
Swills and Waitrose.
No, it was definitely Sainsbury's. It wasn't quite that middle class. With my iPod in, with music on full blast, just in case anyone was talking about the game.
I've done that before.
And then legged it home and watched it. But Kevin Friend was so frustrated. Within a few minutes, he'd given a few bookings to it. I think it was Van Persie, Blint for us, Besic for Everton and somebody else for Everton. That Besic is crap, by the way.
Is he?
Not good enough for the Premier League. And a nasty fucker. But they were for little niggly fouls. They weren't anything too serious. But then the inconsistency, because he'd set the standard at the start, he then stopped booking players for far worse fouls.
I think Van Persie's yellow was actually fair.
The whole point is the inconsistency, and it has been right. I mean, even silly little things, like I mentioned it the other week, Chadley cupping his ear for when he scored at Arsenal. Well, fuck off, of course you can do that. And then Gerrard does the same thing in the Merseyside derby, doesn't get a booking, and you're like,
I think you should get an automatic red for that celebration anyway, to be honest. I hate it when players do that. Or do the finger on the lips. Ronaldo always used to do the finger on the lips. Who are you trying to shut up?
Or Neville. Gary Neville.
No, he deserved a knighthood for that. But, no, but I can't.
All right, but sorry. Yeah, yeah. All right, and speaking of consistency, God, we're good at this. Courtois, the head injury.
Yeah.
I mean, for everything that was said at the beginning of this season, for everything, the fact that he was assessed for 54 seconds.
Yeah.
I know that Eva is absolutely stunning, and we love her, and pretty much whatever she says goes. That's
and
Chelsea physio.
To be
right,
fair, it's hard to tell because most men, when confronted with Eva, will forget their name and start tripping over their tongue
and dribbling.
Hi, Eva.
Yeah.
I know you're listening.
Yeah.
Did you get the flowers?
But 54 seconds is not an ample time to assess on it. He played on for 14 more minutes. Then they saw blood coming from his ear.
Was it that long? I thought it was a lot
14
less.
Minutes. Right, 14 okay. minutes. Blood coming over here, and then they decided to take it off. Turns out he's fine. Yeah. All the scans came back fine. But the whole point was that this was put in place to look after. And obviously, Headway, the charity, have blasted Chelsea again and saying that the whole point was we've got all this stuff in place. This should not have happened.
So my question on this is: is it the referee's responsibility to say, right, I have stopped the game for a head injury?
You've got now, 2 minutes to assess or whatever it is.
I will stop the game for a full 2 or 3 minutes to make sure that you're happy with him.
Because realistically, two minutes at the end of a half for stoppage time is nothing.
Whose responsibility is it? Because when we're talking about
head injuries need to be addressed officially,
they have to be addressed in a different way to how they have been. So, whose responsibility is it to make sure the player's fine to continue?
But I suppose if the referees, we don't know the ins and outs.
No, but if
the referee's given it, and after 54 seconds, the club doctor's gone, nope. I've assessed him, he's fine, play on. And you just think...
The responsibility falls to the club doctor in that sense because they're a medical professional. So they should treat it like it was somebody who's got a head injury in the street.
Yeah.
If somebody has been hit by an Argos catalogue falling down a subway, as somebody very nearly did when I was 16 and threw an Argos catalogue down a subway, you should assess them for a significant amount of time.
You did grow up in the ghetto, didn't you? Wow.
I did, yeah, we had Argos and everything.
The other thing on this...
Northwich is tough.
The other thing on this, and I'll bring two incidents into the mix here. So one is Courtois, right? So if you ask him if he's fine to continue, he's going to say yes, because of the battle that he's got with Peter Cech to hold on to the number one at Chelsea.
Yeah.
And if you go back to the World Cup final where the German lad took that horrendous shoulder barge to the head...
Who was it? The centre midfielder?
Debuted in the World Cup final.
Yeah, the young lad.
But if you're going to ask him if you're right to continue, you're going to say yes because you just made your international debut in the World Cup final.
No, but that is the new laws. It's not the players' decision.
And ultimately, I mean, the fact they've got Peter Cech on the bench should be the shining example of what to do with head injuries because he had a significant head injury that has forced him to wear a skull cap for the last six or seven years.
A scrum cap, not a skull cap, you muppet. He's not Jewish.
But you know what I mean? It is the shining example of what you need to do when there is a significant injury, and it was done at the time.
Agree.
But I understand it's difficult, and
it just leads back to that consistency. It's not been apparent so far in this in the Premier League season.
No, and to be fair, if we're speaking of being consistent, most teams haven't been consistent this season.
No, you're
to
right.
On you look the fact that somehow we're fourth.
How did that happen?
Well, honestly, because we haven't been nearly as bad as everyone said in terms of picking up results.
Have you won the last two on the bounce?
We've won two on the bounce. We should have won three on the bounce, but for the debacle at Leicester. Imagine if we'd beaten Leicester, everyone would be talking about us as title contenders. Not that we've played well enough to warrant that.
But you didn't really. I mean, I only saw the highlights of the game on Sunday.
Against Everton, we did what we've done all season. We were comfortable for 50 minutes, conceded a sloppy goal. We were lucky that Falcao put the poacher's finish, and then we were under the cushion. And we were talking last week about Hugo Lloris arguably being in the top three goalkeepers in Europe. I'd put David De Gea in there as well.
Yeah.
Alongside Neuer, I can't think of any goalkeepers as good as those two because he was spectacular.
I mean, some of those saves were wonderful.
There were two saves. And we were also talking about the fact Leighton Baines had never missed a penalty in the Premier League. 15th attempt. He is missed. And Davide, who isn't particularly strong penalty saver.
It wasn't the greatest pen, but whatever. He stopped Leighton Baines scoring a Premier League penalty.
And you get the little graphic showing where they've put their penalties. A lot of Leighton Baines penalties are like that. He's not someone who gets them right in the corner.
Yeah.
A lot of them are. He sends the goalkeeper the wrong way. It's similar. Yeah. Cantona used to do it. They weren't perfect penalties, but you're wrong for it.
How good was Hazard's penalty?
Exactly. I mean, that was fucking cheeky, wasn't it? Like, he just. But do you know what? I do that, right? I was watching it, right? I have not missed a penalty in an 11-a-side game since I started playing 11-a-side when I was under 9s, right?
That's funny because I've never scored one.
Yeah, well. I've taken quite a few, right? And for me, the easiest thing to do at our level, and I pretty much always go bottom left. I think I've always gone bottom left.
If anyone plays in Dan's league,
but they won't. At our level, the easiest thing to do is to stare at the bottom right hand corner.
Yeah.
Or sorry, not even so much stare. Give the little cheeky glances to the bottom right, and I do it as if to say, I'm just looking where I'm going to put this. And so the keeper at our level, he actually falls for it. I don't think the keeper's ever gone the right way with me because I pretended that I'm going to put it in the right. But it's not that clever. And I've without looking, I've put it left. But that's exactly what Eden Hazard did. I was watching him and he kept looking at the other opposite corner, kept looking.
The difference is that he never took his eyes off of it. It was a no-look shot.
Yeah.
This was complete no-look.
If I'm Petr Cech and Hazard is staring at a corner, I'm thinking he's not putting it in that corner, he's putting it in the other one because he's trying to psych me out. I genuinely think that was a very poor call on Petr. I think he fell for the oldest trick in the book.
Chesney.
That he fell for the oldest trick in the book by going at the corner that the penalty taker was staring at the whole time.
Goalkeepers have to make a gamble, though.
No, I know, but I just...
You have to make a gamble.
Yeah, goalkeepers, it's the same thing.
It's a gamble.
The best goalkeepers should pay no attention to what the penalty taker's doing and just go with their knowledge of
it. They do, but it looked like he'd fallen for the oldest trick in the book.
The best psych-out I've ever seen was Davor Suka playing for Croatia, I think at the 98 World Cup. When he took his own pulse as he was stood there, and he was just really cool, just took his own pulse. Or the other one is Zidane throwing up before he scored.
Afterwards.
But see, I made the cardinal mistake. The one penalty I missed, we were 6-0 up, I think, and I'd already scored a goal in the game. So
just saying,
I wasn't saying, just
hashtag,
saying, you know, hashtag
just
not
saying.
My fault. But I did that. I made the eyes, and being left-footed, I made the eyes in the bottom left corner. I was going to put it in the bottom right corner, to the goalkeeper's left. What I didn't take into account, no, in fact, I wasn't. I was going to hit down the middle, because that's what I did. Getting mixed up now. What I did was hit down the middle, gave the eyes to the corner. I didn't take into account the goalkeeper was just some fat kid who was putting goals. So he didn't move, so it just bounced off him.
He just already
straight down the middle.
If it comes at me down the centre, I'll say
exactly
it. Not,
he was above being psyched out.
Goalkeepers have got nothing to lose in a penalty scenario, have they? You know, they're there to be a hero if they can make a save. That's why you gamble. Chesney called his bluff, didn't he?
It's not often you think of a goalkeeper who's fucked up on a penalty. In fact, I can't really think of any.
I can. The one about that clip where the keeper saves a penalty,
gets up, celebrates,
jumps up, celebrates, but then the backspin takes the ball back into the goal.
Yeah.
That's when wanker. You saved it, and you've really fucked it up.
It's like nobody. In fact, the only example I can think of anyone blaming it is Peter Shilton against Germany. He takes some of the blame because he waited and dived the way that they hit him. So he went the right way every time, but he was always a second behind the ball.
Yeah.
And because he was a 40-year-old at that point, he wasn't nimble enough. It's not like he was Fabian Barthez who could spring like a cat.
Like a cat.
Like a cat saving a penalty.
I haven't got anything that relates to cats.
No.
It's really annoying.
Speaking of...
No, going on to Liverpool.
Speaking of twats.
Speaking of...
No, that's not Mario, fans. Sorry, Liverpool fans.
Mario Balotelli. Oh, you meant the fans. Fucking hell. I thought the club, you've been fine.
I meant the club. I'm apologising. Well, I'm assuming that the board aren't listening. Right, so I'm apologising to the fans.
Okay.
If you are, to be fair, if the Liverpool board are listening. What's he called? The American guy who owns him. Yeah, Henry. He's actually quite a cool dude, so sorry if he's listening.
Nah, I'm sure he won't take it.
He's a bit of a laugh.
But interesting that Rodgers has publicly scolded or given Balotelli a dressing down.
I think this has been blown out of proportion as well.
Oh no, wait, sorry, why are we talking about this? The big Balotelli news, he's broken up with Fanny.
Oh.
It was in The Sun the other day, he's got a new girlfriend who looks quite a bit like Fanny. Nuff said.
Right.
I'll look it up, but yeah, he's not with Fanny.
But didn't he get Jehulid for texturing that other the other birds? Didn't we talk about that a while ago?
We possibly did, but he's with her now.
Oh well.
And you can see why. But Fanny didn't want to move back to England either.
Fair enough.
Can I ask something on Barry Balotelli? Has anyone ever seen him score a free kick from 40 yards?
This is a really random question. Well,
I think he has.
Why does he
when
keep
he
fucking
in
thinking that he can score them? I've watched because he scored from 40 yards.
And to be fair, people said that about Ronaldo for years. We used to get so frustrated hitting him into the wall, hitting him into sand, and then all of a sudden he mastered it. And now you think, oh, 40 yards, Ronaldo will score this.
I think Ronaldo's a different kettle of fish to Balotelli, though. Personally, I don't think that Balotelli's on the training ground hours after everyone's gone home practicing free kicks.
And I don't think he's going home to have a home-cooked meal by his mum, who he has a weird relationship
with. Exactly, he's going off to buy a quad bike for his, for his mum, isn't he?
And walking dogs at the Manchester Dogs Out.
But my point is that he's just a frustrating player. I think this whole Brendan Rodgers, you know, what he's come out and said, I think that's been blown out of proportion as well. I just think, at the end of the day, look, he said
he wasn't playing well.
You've got to start playing better. You cost us 16 million, right?
You got to put the effort in. No, because I mean, they did say that. Well, the analysis of the game is that in the first 10 minutes, Ricky Lambert had made more runs into the channel and done more effort than Balotelli had done for the last three games.
Neither of them in the right place for Liverpool.
No, that's the problem.
Gary Neville and Jamie Carragher were talking about this on Monday Night Football, and Graham Souness was on there as well. Oh, no, it wasn't Monday Night Football. It was after Liverpool lost in the Champions League, sorry.
Oh, yeah, against Basel.
Really, really bad.
Yeah. You got Slater for that, man.
And they were talking about the fact that he doesn't fit into the system.
Yeah.
But what he's trying to do is he drops too deep far too often when there's only one person up front, and that's meant to be him.
Yeah.
So either he needs someone to play next to him, or he's got to play the system much better.
Which is what
Sturridge does well, and which is what
true.
Lambert does.
And which actually, I'm going to throw it in, haven't I? It's actually what Spurs look like they're actually starting to do better, because Adebayor tends to drop off and drop deep. But when you've got three players supporting him, in Eriksen, Chadli and Lamela,
bombing on,
who are bombing on and who are pushing forward, then that's fine for Adebayor to drop off a little bit, because you've got Chadli bursting through the middle.
And this
like
is
that,
why Balotelli is being made to look probably a little bit more
ineffective
than he is.
Because the other Liverpool players aren't doing that.
Yeah, and the energy in the Liverpool team at the moment is not what it was last season.
No.
Lovely goal from Lallana.
The system isn't working for him.
Because they've changed the system too much, I think, as well. The players they've brought in don't fit that fast counter-attacking game.
Markovic struggling with the intensity of the Premier League and the Champions League.
I don't think Lallana's got enough pace. He's a very good player and he played quite well.
Out of all of them, I think Lallana's the one who's getting from box to box better than anyone else.
I have to say that Jordan Henderson's head seems to have dropped away until the weekend, when he was superb by all accounts.
I think Sterling, you know, there's obviously a lot going on.
A lot
Sterling
on his shoulders
with an agent.
A lot of weight on his shoulders. He's now the main man at the moment.
Yeah,
but his head's been turned, because he's currently thinking about what his big contract is. He's not thinking about his football.
And I think personally,
Rodgers should just drop him and make him actually concentrate.
I've said it before, I've said it again. Balotelli and Lambert are the wrong signings for him because of their system. But I think Gerrard's powers have waned. It's natural. It's not a criticism of Steven Gerrard.
Liverpool improved a hell of a lot when they pushed when they brought Balotelli on and pushed Gerrard into the 10 role. They actually linked up well and actually were a bit more creative.
As long as there's somewhere that doesn't require Gerrard to do too much running,
which in theory, the 10 role.
Because there is a massive myth.
That's what you did for Scholes for a long time.
Well, that's what I was about to say. There's a massive myth that Paul Scholes, as he aged, maintained being an excellent player and adapted perfectly, is bullshit. Paul Scholes, after the 2006-2007 season, had one really good season, which was just before he first retired. When he came back, he was okay.
He was only okay.
He had a few good games. And the game was suited to him, where he could sit deep, dictate play, he was great. But there were a good few years, like when Giggs won Player of the Year, because Giggs had acted, Scholes didn't. Scholes looked like a passenger. He looked too slow. His passing wasn't this sat-nav that everyone talks about. He was pretty fucking shit. And I love Scholes.
Yeah.
I love him. But
the Premier League is the hardest league in professional football to be able to be a consistent central midfielder once you get to the stage where you're
a certain age. Because you can do it in Italian league. You can be Pirlo in the Italian league.
You can do it in the Spanish league as well because the general play in the Spanish league is slower. Yeah, it has massive bursts of energy, but it's a slower league. Yeah. Premiership is so hard to be that dynamic midfielder.
And I tell you what, Mario Balotelli has got 18 months before he becomes someone similar, I would say, to a Dimitar Berbatov, who obviously dropped down to Fulham. Or someone like in the Italian Cassano. Berbatov's fine, but the difference is Berbatov did it at a later stage of his career. I think Balotelli is very close to getting to the point where Liverpool are going to cut his losses if he don't work for them. There's not going to be that many takers. He's clearly a controversial character off the pitch.
He might grow up.
He may grow up.
That's why I'm giving it 18 months.
Well, Chelsea were very patient trying to get Torres to score a goal. But I think it's more an attitude problem. I think Torres wanted it,
but just couldn't do it.
I just never think he fitted into the Chelsea setup because I still think he's a great striker.
He looked pretty rotten for Milan at the weekend.
Did he?
But I think
he did well. Did you say
he looked rotten?
He looked rotten,
and he looked miserable when he got brought off. But I think he will. Balotelli, he's running out of suitors.
He's
going to end up going to a middling Italian team, a Lazio, although they don't particularly like players of Balotelli's background, shall we say, their fans. Or somebody like that. He'll just drop down. He'll still be known because he's Mario Balotelli.
The best thing for him would be to just score a couple of tap-ins in the six-yard box. Do you know what I mean?
If we're going to talk about falls from graces, fucking hell, Bobby Soldado. I mean, scoring 80 goals in 160 games in like three seasons, being thought of as a world class striker, a world class poacher.
Well, one would have expected him to go to the World Cup with Spain and be pushing for a start.
I read a really good article actually that a Spurs fan wrote a couple of days ago, and it was just about almost like an ode to Bobby and how sorry and how sad it is for like all of us to see what he's become, because he's a shadow of himself. And it's just I mean the ideal situation for me is that he suddenly finds his scoring boots and everything goes amazing, but I actually want him to leave.
It's a confidence thing for him, and the main problem for him is that he came to a team that played a formation that didn't suit him. He can't play as the front man.
Have we got a little mirror image here of Balotelli in Liverpool or Chelsea and Torres? It shows you how good a player can be, or a striker can be, if you're not playing in the right team with the right system. It can fuck you up.
I happen to think that Soldado's movement as a striker is absolutely fantastic.
So do I, but they don't find him half the time.
The main problem now is that his confidence is so bad.
But I've said this before, that I've seen him, watching him live, and even when I watch stuff on TV, as well as when I go to the Spurs, I like watching the whole game, and I watch what's going off the ball as much as what's going on the ball.
Movement's
even on the TV.
Great.
His movement is fantastic, and he makes a run. No one passes to him. And by the fourth time, he's thinking, can't be fucked. And which is fair enough, but it is sad to see these strikers that have the ability in them, or are talented strikers, and then they're just wrong team.
These strikers, so another striker in question at the moment for his ability, both
Diego Costa
and country. No, he's fucking class.
Fucking ridiculous.
And he's not fully fit.
Although he's got to do it for Spain. But Welbeck.
Oh, he doesn't have to. He's Brazilian.
So Welbeck went from, and I know the class in opposition is very, very different, but he went from scoring a very, very, very impressive hat trick against Galatasaray to being non-existent against Chelsea.
No, he's shite against Spurs.
He
was pretty shite against Spurs.
It's exactly what I said about Danny Welbeck on last show. I know you weren't there.
Inconsistent.
He is going to be someone who might go through a purple patch of form every so often, but he's inconsistent. And I mentioned that we'd had this discussion. I don't think that you can nail the fact that he wasn't given the chance at United as the reason.
Can I just stop you there, Michael? I feel we're repeating ourselves quite a bit over the last few shows. Well, so can I just? You're absolutely right.
But I've got another Danny Welbeck story.
Okay, go.
Have you heard of Jonathan Hope?
Yes.
Yes.
Only because I read about it earlier.
Jonathan Hope. You might have heard him if on deadline day you were listening to BBC Radio 5 Live or TalkSport. Now, he went on there purporting to be Danny Welbeck's agent.
But involved in, not his, I think he's not his actual agent, but involved. He involved was involved in the negotiations of transfers, and he was, yes, in yeah. some way had the relationship.
Now, Danny Welbeck and Arsenal have refuted having anything to do
with it. And United?
Well, that's when you get a little bit more digging, because he claims to have evidence of conversations with a high-placed member of the United board and Daniel Levy. Both Tottenham and Man United have come out and said they've never had any dealings with him. Turns out, Jonathan Hope, he's a Scottish chap, and we exposed him in the Daily Record. Obviously, I had a lot to do with it.
Obviously.
It turns out he's just some fella from Scotland, a bodybuilder.
Expose.
A bodybuilder with a child porn conviction.
Yeah.
Not that that's maybe related to his football, although the fact that he sponsors a child...
This isn't speculation, this is
this fact. Is fact. No, the fact that he sponsors a kids' team and also went out to the Democratic Republic of Congo to give boots to an orphanage, worrying.
All very worrying. Okay.
Leave that one there.
TalkSport and Five Live have they've said they're not going to give him any more airtime.
And he,
no shit!
He put an injunction for this being revealed, only for his legal team to walk out on him 15 minutes before the hearing. And he claimed because he was a celebrity in the world of sport, it would affect.
Celebrity?
He's got no licence. He's got no agent's licence. He's not accredited by the FA, the SFA. No one. It's amazing when that sort of shit can slip through
so
the
what's
net.
What's he actually done?
Well, nothing. But he was getting airtime on. Yeah. So he was accredited by TalkSport and by Five Live on deadline day and all this sort of thing. And then suddenly everyone's gone, who is this geezer? But yeah, all very, very strange.
Right. Your sources.
I've got to have a little hats off to Cristiano Ronaldo, who, not that he needs any more fucking praise, but the fact
he doesn't really like praise either.
No, he hates it. Yeah. But this week scored his 22nd hat trick in the Liga, which puts him equal.
22nd.
Puts him first equal with Di Stefano and Telmo Zara, and then you've got fourth equal. Is Edmundo Suarez and Lionel Messi?
I would have said that Messi scored more hat tricks than Ronaldo.
Here's a question for you: how many hat tricks did Ronaldo score in the Premier League?
None.
One.
Fuck.
Against Newcastle.
So he's done them all in Lisbon
the 22 are all in La Liga. Liga.
They're all La Liga.
Oh, it's in La Liga. Yeah. Sorry, yeah.
And he didn't score any hat tricks for Sporting either. But bear in mind, he was more of a winger.
He only played for Sporting.
At United, I mean, he scored 42 goals in a season.
But he didn't play as a lead striker.
No, but he still scored 42 goals in one season. You'd expect more than one hat trick.
Right.
Which maybe makes it all the more impressive.
So yeah, and he is a world class player.
He didn't play in the modern game.
No, he's different. But he's obviously, you know, Ronaldo's a world class player. And speaking of, you know, possibly the best player in the Premier League at the moment, according to Sam Allardyce, is Stuart Downing.
He's not playing bad, though, is he? He's playing pretty well.
Yeah, but he's not the fucking best player at the moment.
He should be in the England squad ahead of Andros Townsend.
Oh, fuck. Really?
On form.
I should be in the England squad ahead of Andros Townsend, the useless bastard.
I should, as long as I'm not taking penalties against a fat lad.
Absolutely.
I have to say, maybe there's a question in consistency for how Hodgson's picking his squads, and I've moaned about consistency, but...
You've mentioned it a couple of times,
I do sort of agree with what he's trying to do, and that's get a regular set of
consistent
players.
Consistent squad.
And I know that he sees the potential in Townsend, and that he wants to be able to form a nucleus of players who are coming through show potential.
I know what you mean. Downing might be on a bit of form. Downing might be on a bit of form, and he might be for the next couple of games.
There's no point in calling up a 30-year-old.
I am really frustrated with Andros Townsend. Not as much as I am. I think he's the luckiest, definitely the luckiest man in that squad, without a doubt.
Oh yeah,
fuck yeah.
Sorry,
we're running out a bit of time a little bit here. Two managerial appointments to talk about. Russell Slade confirmed at Cardiff, which we talked about last week.
I hope he does terrible. Not for Cardiff. I just think Slade's a twat.
I think that's the wrong appointment.
Missing out on the
which we have spoken about. So we'll leave that there.
Yeah.
The other one is Watford, who have appointed their fourth head coach in 37 days.
It's terrible.
It's ridiculous. So it's Slavisa...
Jovanovic.
Jovanovic,
sorry.
Former Chelsea midfielder.
Yeah.
And he won back-to-back Serbian titles as Partizan Belgrade manager.
He also won the Thai title with Muang Thong United, who were previously managed by Robbie Fowler.
And he also... but he joins them from Spanish third division side Hercules.
Do you know what the interesting Hercules, thing about Hercules. Watford is? They're still in the playoffs.
They're third, yeah. They're third. What?
You know, like they're still up there. What the fuck is going on?
Because this is what we were saying. When you were saying the other day, Schalke have just got rid of their manager because they've started off. Schalke are doing terribly in 11th.
Right, okay.
Sorry, so I said to Mike, I was like, they've got some great players there, your Huntelaar, your Draxlers, your Prince Bernhard. I was like, oh, why have they sacked their manager? And Chris, who's sixth as well, he went, well, they are 11th because they're doing shit. It's not like, oh, we're doing really well, we'll just get a new manager in, like taking the piss out of me, sort of saying, why they sacked the manager? Well, actually, Chris, look at Watford. they're not doing shit.
But Billy McKinley's now the favourite for the Fulham job, so they reckon he's left to take the Fulham job.
Really?
Because he was a Fulham coach for years and he played for them. That's because there's not been a lot said about why he left, but that is pretty much the reason. But
my sympathies go to Watford fans. I mean, I hope they go up now, just for the pure fact of...
I used to live near Watford. I have a bit of a soft spot, and I used to work with someone who was a very big Watford fan. But
speaking of Watford, God, yes, very close to High Wycombe, which is...
Well done for that.
Thank you.
It's not that close.
It's close enough. All right, okay, it's a lot closer than High Wycombe is to Coventry. And I know this is
Speaking of Coventry.
They
beat Exeter last night,
which
Coventry.
Actually is going to lead on so well for you that you're going to fucking love me for doing this.
Okay.
So Wasps Rugby Club, who are based in High Wycombe, are now moving to the Ricoh Arena in Coventry, which has caused absolute massive uproar with the Wasps rugby fans because it is fucking miles away.
Yeah.
And like, they're still going to apparently have their training base and stuff in the High Wycombe area, or that's sort of the.
But they're
now moving to Coventry.
It's unbelievable.
Which is fucking out of order, and fans don't like it when that happens, do they, Michael?
They don't. And speaking of moving around, great result last night in the Johnston's Pape Trophy, and I'm not talking about Gillingham winning on penalties because Jim's not here.
Who cares?
MK Dons 2, Wimbledon 3. Absolutely fantastic.
The crowd goes wild.
Bearing in mind, MK Dons took the lead twice, and I have a bit of a vested interest in MK Dons losing after a result earlier this season that we won't mention.
Absolutely.
But our old friend Akin Fenway scored the winner in the 18th
minute.
Yeah. So absolutely great there.
I didn't see what his challenge was on Sky Sports this year.
The MK Dons this week. MK Dons fans are playing it down a bit. The AFC Wimbledon fans are playing it down a bit simply because they don't want to acknowledge MK Dons.
Yeah, of course you would.
But it's brilliant.
Yeah,
Fair enough.
Water off a duck's back, of course we'd
be. And while we're looking at the lower leagues, Russ Wilcox has been sacked by Scunthorpe this morning. They're 23rd in League One.
While we're looking at even lower leagues.
Go on.
And this makes me very happy. Stylian Petrov.
Has
laced up his boots again.
He's playing
for
the public team.
Yeah, Wycombe Wanderers over 35s in a Sunday league. He's been turning out for them. But it's great to see him in a pair of boots again, and all the best to him.
Just loving it, isn't he?
Yeah. It's great, and that's what we want.
Imagine if you play in that pub team, right? You know when you play in a pub team, you bring a ringer in, and he's a semi-pro, someone like that. Imagine what it's like to play with someone of the ability and technique.
Well, there's a lot of it going around, isn't there?
But I reckon if you sat there going, lads, that's a bit like Cillian Petrov. Yeah. And then you go, fuck off, that's not Cillian Petrov.
It's actually Petrov.
No, lads, I think that's actually Cillian Petrov.
But obviously, we spoke about Simon Davies the other week, the Tottenham and Fulham wingers played.
Okay, right,
the best I've heard is Mendieta. Was playing in one in the northeast because he married a girl from Middlesbrough when he was playing for them, and he settled there. So he's playing in the Sunday League. He's played twice in Champions League finals. He's been
a wonderful
player.
How many caps you got for Spain?
Speaking of lower leagues, Alan Kimball, former Wimbledon defender, a bit of a stalwart for them throughout the Premier League era, is managing in the Southern League. He's got his first game at the weekend, and I can't remember the team, I can't remember the name, but you know who's managing the other team that he's making his first managerial game against? His twin brother.
No.
So he's making it against his twin brother.
Even more interesting lower league news, supposedly the new bird that starred at the Mirror is the daughter of, in inverted commas, Tottenham legend Justin Edinburgh.
Sydney.
Yeah.
Really?
Apparently she's Dustin Edinburgh's daughter.
Right. Yeah. So, sorry, this means nothing to anyone.
Yeah, the bird that looks orange.
Right. Can I just say,
as Chris Cassidy would say, has been left under the grill a bit too long.
Can I just say to our listeners, talk amongst yourselves for a few minutes. Yeah, because I got an email from her and I thought, oh, that's a strange sentiment.
Dustin Edinburgh's daughter.
I saw Edinburgh because I work on a Scottish newspaper. I assumed
Justin's little girl.
His little girl. Because he's in League Two managing...
Newport
County. Yeah. Yeah.
Sent off in the 99 League Cup final.
I'm going to Newport.
Punching Robbie Savage. Are you?
Yeah.
What are you doing there?
Justin Edinburgh.
Yeah, like I said, talk amongst yourself.
Sounds terrible.
I'm just going to throw this in really quickly. Talks have restarted again.
Boo.
Yeah, talks have restarted again.
That was Jim Staples.
Oh, well, yeah, but they have started again of the Premier League reviving plans of playing a match overseas.
I tell you what, because
let's put this into context. Syria.
They're not going to play Syria. That's a terrible decision.
Terrible.
Well, Syria is not too far away. So the Super Cup, the Italian Super Cup in December, is being played in Qatar.
But they've done that for a few years. See,
fuck is that about?
It wouldn't bother me if they wanted to play the Charity Shield in Japan or China every year. It wouldn't bother me at all.
The Charity Shield.
That's the one game you don't go to,
though,
isn't it?
It's the one game I do go to. Italian FA are doing stuff fucking weird because the president of the Italian FA has been banned for 6 months for being a racist bastard.
That's
American
Italian.
A 71-year-old called controversy during his election campaign in July by referring to eating bananas in quotation marks when discussing foreign players. Funnily enough, he later apologised.
I was actually watching Anchorman 2 last night, and there's a lot of racism in that. But obviously,
The difference is the context, I think. But can I just request something?
Go.
Next week's show, because Jim will be back from holiday then, I'm sure he's not listening to this. Can we all pretend that we think the 39th game or the game abroad is a really good idea just to watch him explode?
If he's actually on the show. Listeners, you're in on this.
My last bit is watching you watch Match of the Day 2, didn't you, on Sunday?
No, I just forward wound through everything and just watched the highlights I wanted to.
But did you watch the goal of the season? Did you watch the goal of the season entries?
Valencia won it, didn't it?
No.
Di Maria.
If you've not deleted it, go back and watch it. I'm not being funny. We were talking about this, Michael.
No, I didn't watch this, actually.
September's goal of the month, I don't think you'll get a better combination in the rest of the season.
Really?
They were... The seven entries, was it?
Seven entries. Right. Di Maria won, and he probably didn't deserve to.
It wasn't.
Oh, the cheeky chip.
Yeah, but it wasn't the best goal. I mean, there was...
Any other month, it probably would have won.
Against Leicester,
They were absolutely phenomenal. And we're talking about this, how no one told me that Phil Jagielka's Thunder Bastards against Liverpool was with his right foot. He's left-footed. It was with his right foot.
He's not left-footed.
Phil Jagielka's left-footed.
Charlie Austin should have won it.
Charlie Austin's was magical. I'm
with Paul Merson on goals of the season and the rest of it. I'm on Paul Merson's side.
I want to be on you.
You know, Thunder Bastards are great, and we love seeing them go in, but I mean, it's not massively down to skill or technique. You know, you swing your foot.
Again, you totally disagree. But to keep that ball down like that high, it was high in the air. He's a centre back. He's left footed. He's hit it with the right.
Di Maria's goal is pure class.
No, but it was.
And there's only a few players in the Premier League.
To be fair, Jagielka, there was an element of just swinging his foot at it.
Yeah, but no, but you've got to keep that down. And anyone else would have ballooned it into the... Nah, bullshit.
Charlie Austin and Valencia had more because they had both the skill and
Sorry,
the
Pele.
Power.
Sorry, Pele.
Pele.
The skill and the power,
I mean, they were just wonderful. Just wonderful.
Yeah. I'm much more along the lines of, you know, the technique and the skill goes into it. And if you swing your boot, I love a Thunderbastard.
The technique to keep a shot like that down is unbelievably difficult.
To be fair, they've all got a long way to go to beat Tony Tony Yeboah winning it 2 months in a row, or Dennis Bergkamp getting all three goals in the top three.
That's very true.
If anyone can beat either of them, then we'll stop
then we'll talk.
I think it's about time that we wrap
we'll end
up
on
for
that,
this week.
Sorry, can I just say really quickly, even though Hunter's not here, just to take the piss and go, what the fuck is going on with Celtic?
Yeah,
Hamilton. Losing 1-0 at home to Hamilton, sixth in the league. Hamilton top of the league on 20 points, unbeaten so far. Unbelievable.
Let's just say that Lennon was obviously a better manager than people gave him credit for.
Ronnie Dellia was the stupidest thing they could have done. They should have gone all out, probably even to get Roy Keane, as he mentioned, but simply because he knows the game and he would have got season success. Dellia was brought in to focus on Europe. They fucked that up, and now,
And I'm just going to leave you with this, which will probably be the show photo, even though it could be possibly Saddam Hussein and
probably not a good
Roy
idea.
Keane. Well, possibly not, but I tell you what's also not a very good idea, Ant. And hindsight's a wonderful thing, and Jose Enrique will be thinking about that after he tweeted this morning. Surprised my girlfriend with a new style of beer this morning. She didn't like it very much. Ha 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 ha.
Is that a Hitler moustache?
It's a Hitler moustache.
Okay, well, on that note, you know the score.
It's really bad.
Yeah. we're at Football Podcast on Twitter. We're The Football Podcast on Facebook. footballpodcast.tumblr.com. And, of course, if you do leave a review on iTunes, we will read it out. And we'll like you a bit more for doing so. Have a great week. Try to survive the international break. And we'll speak to you next week.